Can I ask you something? What's your family story worth to you? And I'm not talking about the shiny ones that everybody knows about. I mean the buried ones, the secrets, the heartbreaks, the ones that only slipped out after a night of too much Hennessy. That's what Vietnam Story Bank is for. No polish, no rewrites, no editing, just raw, recorded, beautiful beating history. The kind that makes you sit up and hold your breath. Your father's memories of his mother's wildest dreams, your grandparents' laughter that echoes in your bones. We dig it all up, we record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, untouchable, and unforgettable. Because when your stories disappear, they're gone forever. So go to VietnamStoryBank.com today and make sure your family's stories are recorded. Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today I have Mia Nguyen with Viet Boss Babes. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Kenneth. So happy to be here.
And I'm happy that you're here. I like to reach out to podcasters and creatives who are doing things that I think we need more of, especially in the podcast space. I wanted to invite you on to the podcast today to first of all, see how we can, you know, uplift you in terms of getting more reach out there. And I want to learn from you, you know, the older generation. Like, we have a lot to learn. And I think that opening ourselves up to learning from young people like yourself is paramount to the growth of our community. So here we go.
Wow, I'm so honored. It's kind of like a moment of a student finally becoming a teacher in a way, because Kenneth, I've been following the Vietnamese podcast for a while now. And back in the day, like, you're one of the few platforms that is cater tours for Vietnamese, and so so honored to be here. I'm a fan, I'm a subscriber, so happy to be on the podcast.
Thank you. And Mia happens to be my daughter's name too, so.
Oh my gosh, what a small world. It's all meant to be.
Yeah, so tell me about your journey from Vietnam, like where you grew up, how you grew up, and then what brought you here, because I think there's a lot of things that I want to discuss about the idea of Vietnamese families that send their children to the United States or to Canada to study and then eventually create roots. And, you know, that whole journey is very interesting to me.
Yeah, of course. So happy to walk you and the audience back to a bit about my journey. So born and raised in Hanoi. Both my parents are Hanoian, and like they're grew up in like the downtown core, like Phố Cổ. And then at 18, so that was like 10 years ago, my parents and I decided like to send me abroad. So we chose Canada, and I went abroad to study university and have been living in Toronto, Canada for the past 10 years. It's a long time now that we're like talking about it. But yeah, that's kind of like a quick journey. I'm the first generation to study abroad. And I have two younger siblings. My younger brother is currently living in Montreal. And then I have a younger sister as well, who's living at home.
And yeah. When you were growing up, did you prepare to leave Vietnam?
Mm-hmm. I think we explored a lot of options, and the goal wasn't to leave Vietnam. The goal was to get the children the best education possible. And when I went to university back in the day, so 10 years ago, when we were looking at different education options, I think studying abroad in quote-unquote like developed countries and North America, the UK, Australia, and so on, was the best options out there. And so that's kind of what we decided to set me up for, to study abroad. You know, learning English at a very early age, and, you know, taking after school to make sure that like my English is sufficient by the time that I study abroad. I think all of that was like preparation steps to send me abroad. I would say now, though, like the Vietnamese education system is different. Like it's very much like caught up. There's a lot of local schools and local options that you can go to for higher education. So it's a little different. But back when I went to university, I think that was the path that we know best. Yeah.
You know, 10 years ago is a long time, and a lot has changed in 10 years in the United States with Vietnamese American communities. But I am always curious when I talk to young people who came 10, 15, 20 years ago, did your parents and the people around you, did they have to brief you on like the differences of like the history of the Vietnamese in Vietnam versus the history of Vietnamese Americans?
Yeah. That was a personal culture shock for me. Growing up, like I went to public school for the early age of my education, and so I learned the Vietnamese history. And I think I wasn't really briefed or educated on the Vietnamese community in North America, how they came here, the different waves of migration too. So I think I wasn't really informed about that. Like we kind of touched on it a little bit by passing in conversation in Vietnam, but like I was never fully exposed to that history. And then when I came to Canada, I think it was definitely a culture shock moment when I realized like, oh, like there's my people came, there's a completely different generation, different waves of people coming here by boat, by planes, refugees, Vietnamese, who have a very different connection to Vietnam. I was very humbled when I learned that. And I really, in a way, like made that part of my education too. Yeah. So in university, I studied political science because I was always so curious about how the world moves, how things are connected to each other. I get to do a research, firsthand research on the Vietnamese migration and the Vietnamese refugees themselves, and interviewing people in Toronto and Montreal as well on this has been was very eye-opening and very emotional.
Yeah. And it works both ways too. I think there's a lot of us here that when we go back for the first time, and we're born here and we go back for the first time, there's shell shock. There's like people that I traveled with for the first time to Vietnam, leaving when they were 6 months old, getting to Vietnam when they were 50, and seeing the red flag with the yellow star, they flip out. They're like, what? How is this possible? I mean, they just don't, It just doesn't register in their brain. Like there's this country that grew up without you, It's been existing for 50 years, and you have been living in, Missouri or Oklahoma, and you've been away from this entire growth of this world that doesn't. So I like to talk about that all the time, because I think the more we talk about it, the less awkward it gets. And I think that the difference is so beautiful and profound sometimes, and especially for second generation people like you and I are probably second generation in terms of after the war, we're born way after the war. There's a lot that we don't know about each other's, families and histories. So when somebody like, you, an international student, comes to the United States, it's such an experience, I think, for you. And, and now we, as the Vietnamese Americans who've been here for all these years, are learning about, there are, it's a hopeful young wave of new Vietnamese that are like coming up.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's it was a learning curve. And I'm also glad to be where we are today, where there's just more conversations, more education and history education, especially on social media as well. One of the biggest like outlet for the younger generation to connect with different waves of Vietnamese, and like having be able to like have these conversations openly, I think it's so beautiful. Yeah,
it's beautiful and it's important as well. How did you get started with the podcast? What inspired you?
Yeah, I think so the podcast idea has been in the making for maybe 5 years. I feel like I've always wanted to start a podcast or just wanted to tell stories. And I think I just never got over the hump of the, what will people think? What if people think is cringy, right? And I think that was like always helped me back. Like I've been listening to podcasts for a very long time, also to learn English and to educate myself on the world news. And then I think a year ago, I finally bit the bullet and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. And then if people resonate with it, great. If people don't, we're going to keep going and iterate from there. And I think that's kind of how I started publishing my first few episodes with my Vietnamese friends. And everyone was super supportive when I first came out. Everyone was really excited for me to be doing this. And now it's gotten to a point. It's still a very small podcast, but like it's grown to a point when there's a community of followers that is beyond my friend circle, which is really cool. And very validating that there is a white space that needs to be filled. And like, I'm contributing to filling that. Yeah. And then I think also like just overall, like why a podcast too, like recent podcast guest Lily, she talked about the red string theory and how there is always if something is meant for you, will always be there for you. And I think looking back at my podcasting and storytelling journey, I think in a way like always been drawn to storytelling. When I look back at my childhood, like I think at 13, the most expensive birthday gift that my dad got me was a little camera. And it's always carried with me as like the one who's really good at literature class and like English classes and storytelling. And I think it kind of all came to fruition through Viet Boss Babes now.
You know, I want to use this moment to encourage anybody who's listening who is sitting on the fence about podcasting. I'm going to just volunteer you, Mia, because Mia and I will help, right? We will help build this podcasting community. And I talked to all the podcasters and we need more. And it's so funny that you said that it took you a few years. You just said 5 years. Same here. It took me 5 years.
Yeah.
It took me 5 years from 2015 to 2020. 2015, I was like, I'm going to do it. And then every day it was like, I'm going to do it. But it took me 5 years to build up the confidence and the cringe factor of going, oh my God, what if I start and I can't, like, I can't keep going after 20, 30 episodes, you know? I was so terrified of that. And you know, to be honest with you, I still am. I still have that fear. It will never go away. And I think if it goes away, that means I'm probably not growing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel more comfortable in my skin now, but at the same time, the same fears of cringe and imposter syndrome, I don't think that ever goes away. So I just want to let everybody know, if you're doing this, you're gonna have to accept that.
Yeah, I think it's just part of if you're not uncomfortable, are you actually growing, right? I think content creation, whether it's podcasting, whether it's writing newsletters, whether it's putting yourself on LinkedIn, like I think I'm seeing a lot more Vietnamese doing that. And for those of you who think like, oh, there's so many people who are already doing that out there, like what, like why does it matter? I think more is more, especially for the Vietnamese community. There's still so much space for you to come in and share your story, and no one can compete with you for being you.
Yeah.
So you will always have a unique take on things that you're interested in, and someone out there will resonate with it.
And I challenge people to sit and do an inventory of how many podcasters that are in the Vietnamese space. It's not much. So
not much.
If you're thinking about it, you should do it, because there are so many angles that we need to cover. I mean, sometimes I'm like, do I need to like niche down and like go more specific and answer to more of an avatar, you know, like a sales avatar that, you know, a 35-year-old guy who is, you know, in the tech space and, you know, but that's not how my brain works. And I'm trying to kind of be more disciplined because your title is Viet Boss Babes. You have a very clear mission. And I wanted to ask you about that. You know, tell me about how you came up with the name and who are you preaching to? Who are you talking to? Or is the choir, you know, like who are the people that is your congregation and how has it changed?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I feel like I never get the opportunity to look back what happened in a year ago, right, when the brand came out. So Viet Boss Babes, in terms of the name, I think it came from a space of like, I want this to create a platform or really a knowledge hub for Vietnamese women to go to when they have questions, when they're stuck in a dilemma, when they're stuck with career growth, when they want to move up, when they're navigating between family planning and ambition and taking risks. There's a go-to space where other Vietnamese women who are ambitious, modern, have the drive, gone through the hard, done the hard work, share their experience and their tips and advice. So I think that's kind of where the brand came from, you know, being a boss, right? And being a babe. and so in terms of who are my audience, I think when I first started, I didn't really have like a clear personas of who I want to target. I think it was more like coming from within interest. And I think I'm just going to put it out there and see how the market responds to this kind of content. So I don't really think a lot about like who my audience is. It's more like, who am I or what kind of content do I find important to put out there? So that's kind of what like I start with. And then I think over time, I'm slowly building a niche and a community of Vietnamese diaspora, mainly female, who are in the 25 to 37, 35 categories, you know, going through that motion of like life transitioning and making big life decisions as Vietnamese, American, Vietnamese, Europeans, whatever that is, like hyphenated identity. So that's kind of like what the community that I'm kind of trying to carve out.
What are some things that have really surprised you along this journey? What are some things that you're like, whoa, like that is what that's happening?
Oh my gosh. I think it was 3 months into Viet Boss Babes, where my mom messaged me and she was like, oh, so-and-so, my family friends, childhood family friend has a daughter who lived in Korea and she found you and she followed you. And I'm like, my podcast reached Korea? That is insane. I think like, you know, 50 followers who are all my friends on Instagram, and now my podcast reach Asia or reach Vietnamese female audience who are in Korea. I think that was like a wow moment for me when it really motivates me to move forward with this idea, because going back to my fear, and to this day I'm still scared that like my content is cringy or like I'm saying something that's like out of the line and so on, but it was validating to know that like I should just keep going and also just be more me, because people want more of that. People don't want generic content. People want niche content that speaks to them.
That's hard to do. You know, that's like a lifelong to be authentic and then to be authentic on camera, to just be you.
Yeah, I struggle with that too. And I think we talked about like the 5 year sort of before we started or launched. I mean, it's the same journey. I hear that quite a bit with podcasters. And then I have been thinking about a project for 2-3 years now that is an addendum. It's a sort of like a companion piece, but it's like shorts to, you know, talking to the camera and sort of like deliver proverbs or list or a rant or whatever. And I can't get myself to do it, you know?
Yeah. Like a vlog. Yeah.
Cringe, imposter syndrome. Yeah. It's all that. So when you guys out there see it coming, like, you know, this has been going on for 3 years of my life. Every day, I'm just speaking it out in words because I need it to happen. And it's 3 years now that I talked about this. And all my friends and family are so tired of me just like, oh my God. But I think things sort of fall into place when they're meant to fall into place, right? And I wanted to hear what that red string theory was all about that you talked about. Because I've never heard of that.
Yeah. So the red string theory is an Eastern belief that what's meant for you will find you. Or it kind of came from more like a romantic connections where or like human connections where you know, like sometimes like you have like really close friends now or like your life partner. And then the more you talk about and you share about like your upbringing, where you live, where you go for grocery, and you realize like, wait, I also go to the same place in the same space. And then sometimes like you might found them in the background of your photos very, many years ago. So it's kind of like the red string theory is like there's an invisible string that ties you together. And eventually when the timing is right, you will meet and cross paths. And I think that kind of applies to how I found the podcast. Because yeah, like I think growing up, every birthday, so I was always a book nerd and I was obsessed with Harry Potter growing up and then Twilight and then Hunger Games. Like I kind of read everything in one sitting. And I think growing up, I've always, every birthday, my mom can validate this. Every birthday, my birthday wish was like, I want to go to Oxford because they have the best literature program. And then fast forward, I'm in political science, I'm writing essays, I'm studying humans, and my research, my graduating research was a documentary about people. And I think now that I'm doing the podcast, I think it all kind of ties together about like all of these little pieces and puzzles that have like led me to where I am today with VietBossBase. Yeah.
How do you pick your guests? What are the criteria?
Yeah. I would say in the beginning, and I think until now, I want to just highlight very unique stories and things that are like not as highlighted in a way. So like small business owners, small content creators who are doing very cool and interesting and niche things. So that kind of the criteria, I would say, is like, what are the cool things that you're doing right now? And you don't have to be like the most popular, like, person or the most influential person out there. But like, if you're doing something cool and you're like creating a positive impact on 10 people in your community, I want that on the podcast because I want the audience to resonate with you because maybe they're also starting from step zero and they want to build to one, right? Like, what is the zero to one look like for different people? So I kind of, that's how I picked my guest. And then I kind of want to, I'm hoping to just get more guests of different background, different age demographic too, so that eventually like you can like get more just like more diverse content, diverse guests on the show. Yeah.
Who are your sort of guests that you would hope to have on one day? Your dream guests?
Yeah. Okay. All right. This is my plug. I think, let me think. So it will be really sick to get my fam on the show. So my fam is a 21-year-old content creator. She's from Canada, and she currently lives in New York. And I watch her show like breakfast. I like every time she has an episode out, I am meditating to that.
Wow.
And it's
What kind of
just,
content did you
yeah.
create?
So it's just it's mainly like lifestyle content and her vlogging to yourself, which is like, on YouTube, like you have a lot of vlog content like that, where it's like, get ready with me to do this, and then like follow me as I a day in the life of me in New York. But it's the way that she captures the her audience and making you look like her best friends, like you're so involved in her day-to-day life. And there's only very few Vietnamese content creators who are doing that right now, and at that scale too. Like she has like millions of followers, and she's been doing this when she was like 13 or something. And now at 21, you're like a multimillionaire living in New York. Like it's crazy, and yet like her content is still consistent and down to earth. It's the same brand. It hasn't evolved. It's the same my fam. I think it'll be sick to have her on. I would make my trip to New York just to see her and interview.
That's so cool. And is she from Vietnam or is she from she's from
Canada.
Canada? So she born and raised in Canada?
Yes, born and raised in Canada. I think she's maybe second gen or third generation Vietnamese in Canada, and then from a very small town, and then moved her way up to New York.
That's Viet Boss babe
Crazy.
right there. That's like
That is, she is hardcore Viet Boss
that's some
baby.
legit Viet Boss babe. All right, who else?
Oh
That's
yeah.
an amazing example, by the way. But who else? I want to hear some big aspirations.
Yeah, I think the other one is Thuy. So she is an American Vietnamese who is blew up recently. Like I think in the past year, she was one of the first Vietnamese or the first Vietnamese American to be at Coachella, to be performing at Coachella. I think that was like huge, and she's making waves. And in many ways, like she's contributing to that piece of the pie of making Vietnamese music global. It's so cool what she's doing, and I'm seeing her more on VQ media and like all kind of like embracing her Vietnamese identity a lot more. And I think I would be sick to have her as
Okay,
well on the show.
here's what we're gonna do with Tui. I think we're both gonna have her on this year. This is what we're doing, okay?
No
Yeah, I mean,
way.
I know her and I've run into her a few times and I've just I need to reach back out. But yeah, she's been busy and but I'm gonna reach out to her manager An. Her manager is wonderful. Her manager has done a wonderful job of help managing her career, and they're very awesome people. Too, and she An is probably another Viet Boss babe too. You know, she's really amazing at what she does. And so let's put it out there: we're both going to have Twee, and perhaps An has been on the show.
Yeah.
So I'll reach out, and we're going to make that happen. Okay, I'll manifest.
Manifesting to the universe.
We're going to manifest Twee on each of our podcasts because I think it's important for her to show up. And another person that we should both have is Amanda Nguyen. She is the astronaut that is
Yes.
I think launching into space in a few days.
Yeah, she's been a huge activist. I didn't mention her name. Yeah, like she's been on my collection list, like my save list, my vision board for a very long time. Would be really cool to have her on Viet Boss Babes
Yeah.
as well.
I in the early days did not think about having a balance voice of women on my podcast. So I was called out by a lot of my close friends. They're like, wait, it's like 20 to 1 right now. You know, like what's wrong with you? And I, you know,
Yeah.
just didn't think about it. And that is a problem. That is a me problem, to not have that effort put in and that mindfulness to think about my sisters, my my aunties that are in the communities that are doing big things, you know. And so I slowly started to kind of like be more mindful of asking women, and even now I'm having a hard time because there's just so much more men that are in the spotlight. So I think you and I should be constantly checking in with each other to highlight and say, hey, Ken, I think you need to have this woman on the podcast. So I want to let you know, and I'm publicly letting you know, that it is a struggle for me, and to have you sort of as an ally in this space would be great. And if I have Viet Boss Babes out there, then I will make that introduction to you. And I think this is what I'm talking about constantly, about having more podcasters in the space, because your mind and my mind, when we're talking to an Amanda or a Tui, is going to be very different. Mm. Your questions, your vibe is going to be way different than mine. And so the more we get to do 360 angles on the people in our community, the more important, the better our chances of uplifting our entire community.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I'm so curious, like, why do you think it's a struggle? I know you briefly mentioned that, but like, why is it a struggle to find female guests on the Vietnamese podcast?
That's a good question.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Because I think for me, just naturally, it's just easier maybe to talk to guys. Maybe. That's the most basic, you know, that's the most basic answer I have. And then the second, if I want to go deeper, is just, I'm not mindful. I'm not mindful of putting a Vietnamese woman as a priority and to balance out that voice. And I need to do better, right? It's not easy. I think it's something that I, it's a blind spot. And I look back at my roster, every few weeks, and I'm like, whoa, like if I look back at my roster right now in the last, I don't know, 10, I think it's all men. And then now I'm going to have, you know, you as a guest. So it's like, but how many people am I thinking about, you know? And so it's hard for me, you know, but I need to do better. And, you know, I hope by being open about it that I can encourage a heavily patriarchal society to do better for my daughter, Mia. You know, it's something I want to do better, but you know, it's something that I strive and work hard on.
Yeah, I mean, the first step to fixing any challenge is awareness, right? And you're like very aware about that. And I'm glad that you are aware and want to take actions in that. So of course, I'm going to pass on all my guests to you and then expect them to be on the Vietnamese podcast. And it's interesting that you like mentioned that, yeah, like all my guests are male, because actually maybe it's a little teaser, but like one of the goals for me this year is actually to get male guests on my podcast, and kind of approaching it from like a like, you know, topics that women care about, because I think there's like a bit of a, in a way, like, yes, I'm gonna continue to create a platform for female audience, but also when it comes to like personal life, sometimes it's like an echo chamber of like women giving women's advice. And then sometimes, especially in like a romantic relationship setting, especially for like, you know, like the 20 to 30 year old like female audience, I feel like there's a bit of too much of an echo chamber where the guy is always the bad guy in a dating store. Yeah. And I'm like, I get it. There is a lot of problems with the male species. But I think that we should also do our best to get their perspectives from like, how do the males see it in this certain scenarios?
I'm worried.
Yeah.
So. I'm really worried about
yeah. Men.
I don't, I have family who are, you know, mid-30s, late 20s. Mm-hmm. Video games, porn, social media. They never leave the house. It's, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, that's just not Vietnamese men. It's like, there's a lot of young white men in general in this day and age. It is a problem. You know, they don't drink. They don't go out. They don't do anything. I have a friend who is a few years older. He's in his mid-50s. And, you know, he and I were both in the Marines together. His, two sons hooked on video games, like my cousins, you know. And the thing is, he goes, I give them a car, I give them credit cards, debit cards. Those guys are done with college now. They have not dated. They don't want to go out. I give them all the money in the world. They won't use it. They just won't go out and they just won't do anything.
Why is that? Why do you think that's the case? Because I, on the female sub point of view too, like I also see a lot more single women, and like by choice, because the perception is like there's just more good women than good men ratio, especially in big cities, and it's very hard for women to find eligible bachelor too, and then like very high value women, and then they end up like by choice, like living, I guess it's like choosing to be single is a happier choice for them. So it's like, why do you think in general like men are kind of going down a regression trend in a way?
Yeah. I think I can only answer from the Vietnamese American perspective. I can't answer from the American fully white perspective.
Yeah.
I can guess, but just speaking from my own experience, and then my own experience with being from the Vietnamese culture and being of age where I grew up a lot around a lot of men who came from Vietnam, directly from Vietnam. I think Yat Jung, that word is a very bad word. Mm. I mean, it's almost equivalent to, I think it's just a more sinister version of the word patriarchy. Yat Jung means like the king of the family, And yeah. my way is the only way, right? And yeah. women be damned, child be damned, like everybody in that ecosystem be damned. Like I bring the money, I call the shots, and that's it. That's just the way it goes. And I think that it's probably gotten better throughout the society in Vietnam now, but I think its lingering effects is there. And then I think it's in me because I try to get rid of it. I try to purge it. I try to like do something about it. But addressing it head on takes time, and you kind of have to bump into different different situations where you're like, oh, it comes out. Okay, so you're dealing with that, right? You're dealing with that Yatjung. And, you know, I have uncles that are like, they come from that. And then their sons are like having to deal with the fathers like that. And then what happens is like, wait a minute. I got social media, I got porn, and I got video games. I got these three things that make me not want to deal with women who are anti-Yatjung, who are independent, who are strong, who are amazing, badass Viet boss babes. You know, they don't want to deal with that new level up with women. And so now we're like, okay, not only can they not deal with stronger women because we're living in a new day and age, but now we have something that is crippling the young men. So now we're dealing with these two problems. You're like the up leveling up of women, and then you have this like crippling of men with video games, porn, and social media. So what do we do? It's, you know, I don't know if it's anybody's fault, but here we are.
Yeah, it's almost like there's just too many escape tools, escapism. It's like, oh, they're going to default to the social media. They're going to default to the video games because it's just easier, right? And humans are by nature lazy. So not just men, it's just like man specific, but it's just human by nature. They choose the lazy path. And so when things are challenged, especially because for women now, like, you know, historically, men make more money than women. You have to be financially dependent on them. There's a lot of more, your proportion of stay-at-home mom is bigger, but now women bring in the money too. Yeah. Sometimes they're the breadwinner, and you have to deal with that, right? And I'm seeing when I was, so I visit Vietnam every year, like visit home every year, and like I see more and more, there's just a lot more single moms by choice. Single mom, successful women in their late 30s, because there's just not a lot of eligible bachelors that can match their worth or match their leak, right? But not to say that like, oh, we are better than you, but it's just like, it's also a struggle because it's like, sometimes like you do want to be, have a family, and you want, like for women, like you want to find that partner to match, that match you, but it's hard. Yeah.
It is very difficult. It's difficult for men. It's difficult for women. I think the compassion is lacking on both sides. I go through it. I have to like check myself, and you know, I'm learning all the time that, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. And at the same time, you know, there's things that I don't know that I don't know. And I think that women are much more advanced than men, and men catching up with women today is a hard part, because where is the willpower to catch up and to have the humility to say, you know, I'm wrong, you know, or being too late about saying I'm wrong, you know?
Yeah.
So it's such a difficult thing. And I hope you do bring it up in your podcast, because it's a very important topic.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a magic wand, what do you think would be the canon event or the solution that Vietnamese men need to get out of this?
You know? I think it has to be government led in most things. Mm-hmm. I think the government needs to spread awareness about, I mean, I don't think men get charged for beating their wives in Vietnam, do they?
I don't think right? so, no.
Yeah. All right, let's start with that. That's number one. Like, I mean, even when a man yells at a woman, which I've done a lot, that is abuse. And I'm learning, I'm learning that that is not, it's hard to control. It's just very difficult when you see your dad do it, or your dad did it to you. And so you're programmed to think that that's a normal way to communicate. So I think the government in Vietnam has to really take a hold of this idea of like, okay, we got to have public messages, public campaigns, public service announcements that spotlight this idea of you can't even yell, you shouldn't even be raising your voice, right? And I said, I'm guilty of that. I'm learning how to control it and emotionally regulate that. Whether it's my daughter, my mom, or my, you know, my significant other, though it's inside of a Vietnamese man. And my magic wand would be to find a way where government can intervene and really push to change that in Vietnamese society. And we brought it to, we brought it to America. Vietnamese men after the war, as traumatic as they were from all the fighting in the war, they added another level of this to within their family.
Like so, toughness.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's an interesting problem to solve. I don't think that it's a doomsday yet. I think it's reversible. I'm very optimistic about that. I feel like,
how would it be reversible?
I think it's, I think like even if you follow like the Etcetera, I think there's a lot of male guests coming on and talking about emotional intelligence, like emotional hardship, being more vulnerable. And I think it starts with that. I also think like women, I do think, so bit of a tangent, but it's unfortunate that when a developed countries or when a country's birth rate start to decline, no country has successfully bringing it back up, right? If you look at like China, I don't have the stats
Japan,
in front of Korea, me right now. Yeah, in like China, they have to get rid of the one-child policy because of the birth rate declining. I'm not sure how far or like whether there's been any change in that rate, but it's an issue, right? And I feel like you can start seeing a glimpse of that with Vietnam, because people are just not getting together as much because of the problem that you and I are talking about. But I'm hopeful that there is a way to reverse it. I think we're at the early stage of seeing birth rate start to stagnate and like family, like there's a decline in marriage and also on. But I think we're at the early age. And I think that what we're doing right now, talking about it, putting it out there in the world and like challenge the narratives is a way for us to contribute towards the conversations. And I think we just need to do more of that to reverse it, put a stop break in, put a stop in this.
But you know, I mean, you have to ask yourself, I have to ask myself, why would it be important to reverse this when everybody is happier, not getting together?
Yeah.
Why should we get together? You know, that's the big question I ask myself. Like, I'm happy just making podcasts and learning about, you know, and do I need to partner up with somebody and slow me down in the work that I do? That's a question I want to explore. But then there's this like real need for connecting, right? There's a real
I think that in the past year, there's been a lot of studies that stats come out that North America and the U.S. physically have a loneliness pandemic, right? Yeah. Like everyone is up for themselves. It's like every man for themselves. The individualistic culture is at the breaking point when you're seeing that it's have a damaging effect, of decreasing in quality of life for you and I. And it's like, it sucks because loneliness is it's not like sickness where you can see it right away. It's like a gradual downhill. And by the time that you see the bottom of it, you're like, how do I climb back up? Whereas I think, you know, in at least in Vietnam, we came from a culture, a collectivist culture is very strong. It's still very strong. And I think that we shouldn't put a stop of that. I think that there is a balance between like celebrating more individuality. I think that's where Vietnamese women in Vietnam get more space and more of an authority, right? To like be themselves and like they have options more. So I think it's a upside of individualism, but then there is the foundation of Vietnamese culture. We're still at the end of the day very family oriented. We care about the community, and I think that we really need to lean on to that right now before it's too late.
Yeah, and as far as magic wands are concerned, I mean, if I had a magic wand, a true magic wand, I'd get rid of social media, video games, and porn. I think those are the true destruction of society. Like, you cannot, any one of those addictions is the downfall of our societies, period. And I think when there is no nagging, sort of internal nagging engine, like in a man to go out and look for a woman, you've already killed society.
Yep.
And because when I was like, in my early 20s, I remember going out 8 days a week, you know, I'm like out every single night. I was out and I was out partying and I was out meeting friends and I was just always out in LA. And I remember like the amount of like women that I wanted to meet. It was so, and every guy that I knew during those years were like the same. And then I look at my cousins and I look at young modern men, both in Vietnam and here. No, they're on Call of Duty. They're on, you know, they're on video games and they don't care.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, you know, going out there to get girls is the uncomfortable thing, right? Yeah, you have to be trained to get rejected because it happens so often.
Absolutely.
And I remember, like, I mean, like my male friends, you know, in like their late 20s now, like we all, like they all recall, like, oh yeah, back in the day in high school, like you'll like have to going out with the guys, like the form of entertainment is going out with their boys and practice flirting, right? Practice social skills and popularity in high school socially gets you to places. And I think these are all things that like are so important. We laugh about it, but then when we're in high school, but now like you look back to it and I'm like, all these guys, they have the social skills because they've been trained and like that was their entertainment outlet, right? Not video games. But now their entertainment outlet is video games, and you see them like hanging out in like a dingy bedroom of somewhere, like of someone's house, and they just do that. And yeah, it's unfortunate.
And I'm here to tell every parent, like, if you have kids that are at that age where they are playing video games, I say, cut the cord, burn the video game now, save your child, because it's a nightmare. I think I've seen a few families now, they just crippled their children, and I'm like, what are they gonna do? Because I think the ability to actually go out and mingle with women for a man is an important part of your confidence. It's an important part of your managing your sort of like ability to go out and deal with the real world and deal with rejection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like EQ too, right? Yeah. Emotional intelligence. Like that's also how you train yourself to manage when you feel uncomfortable or manage when you get rejected, like anger, disappointment, all of these, like you have to start training it at the early age and how to manage your emotions. And like all of these, you know, fun and game of like going out and, you know, being on the streets, like that's what it's for. And now it's not. Now there's you're kind of stuck on the screen. Yeah.
So we hopefully we'll return on another podcast to talk about this in depth. And hopefully the next time we talk about it, it's not as grim, but I highly doubt it, that it won't be as grim. But when we create this network of guests and podcasters and grow the strength of our community, and really flex it, I hope that you can, you know, lend your support to other young men in your world and young women who want to podcast, and certainly reach out to me whenever you need help. I'm putting it out there.
Thank you so much, Kenneth. I think overall, yes, like it's a tough situation to be in, you know, men, women, dating, relationship. I'm hopeful though. I think that there are like the younger generations, they are working on it. I think there is in little things, like when I was in Vietnam, I had, I got myself a deck of card games called Heal. And it's basically just like cards in, you know, asking like deep questions, but in Vietnamese, and it's bilingual.
And Heal? And I understand.
Heal. Yeah, heal, experiment. And I got a deck of cards and played with my dad. Can you imagine like parents, like Vietnamese parents talking about emotions, vulnerable with their children? It's very rare.
Yeah, rare.
But there are little things like that. And I think that there are little, like, you know, I think it's great that male are talking more about vulnerability. There's great that toxic masculinity is being frowned upon and is being called out. So I feel like it's a fight that we have to keep fighting, and get rid of social media, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Social media is. But, you know, the funny thing is when you watch YouTube videos, you walk away feeling good. You walk away feeling better.
Long form content.
You know, things that are very instructive or inspiring or edutainment. YouTube is the place. And when you are on YouTube, Netflix, obviously, these streaming, you know, content that are movies, there's a lot of lessons in movies and, you know, relief for comedy. But social media is bad. So social media is a difficult one. I mean, and I say that because I am an addict. I think that I'm an addict when it comes to social media.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard. It's like, I think it's a beautiful thing that came out of the internet, because now you have platforms for people like us to celebrate our community through a screen, through the internet, right? It's how you use it. It's how it's designed. And it's unfortunate that the metrics that the designers or like the companies are going after is not humane or is not human-centric. But I think there is hopes that we can create a more intentional internet and a safer internet for everyone.
So being a podcaster, Mia, I know that you might have questions for me. So I'll use these like final sort of minutes if you have any questions for me. And if you don't, that's okay too.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my gosh. Welcome to Viet Boss Bays, Kenneth. I'm glad to have you on the show. That is so funny. I think... I would love to learn what is the biggest lesson that you've learned about yourself since starting the Vietnamese podcast.
I think that I have learned, and I'm still working on this though, but to give myself more space and grace for not being perfect. I have so much expectations about how I carry myself that it really injures my personal relationships around. It's because I have so much expectation and judgment on myself, and I didn't have that as intense before the podcast, but after the podcast it was like that intensity grew. And to make space and grace and constantly remind myself that, you know, this is a long journey. You're not going to get it right away. It just takes time. But some of my friends were like, you know, you, it can go, you can make this go away. You could think about things and accelerate the growth, or it doesn't have to be 10,000 hours anymore. You could just, there's people out there doing it, you know, they get on for a year and they're like, you know, millions of followers because of, you know, that mindset. And so I think in order to even get to that point, you have to like have a lot of grace for yourself. And that's what I've learned. And I'm working on that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a beautiful thing too. Look, lessons that you've mm-hmm. learned. And yeah, I guess if you have a message, if you have a son, a 20-year-old son, what is the advice that you would give to them? Your biggest words of wisdom. Yeah.
That's a really good question. You should think about podcasting there, Mia.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's a great question. I actually have a 6-year-old son, and I think about this question a lot, because I think every boy is different. My brother and I are two different boys. He was more shy, and my son takes after my brother, I think. They're very nerdy kind of guys, and they're both good-looking dudes. They're both like really handsome guys. And I'm not just saying this, but I grew up in the shadow of my brother's handsomeness. He was just like a beautiful man when we were growing up. And my son is similar to my brother. They're kind of shy and awkward. So I can't really inspire my son to go out and like explore and just go out every night and be a wild man like me, because I think my daughter has that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is something that I can program, but I know one thing is like I will limit social media. I will limit as much as I can this idea of porn and video games for as long as I possibly can. That's mm-hmm. one thing that I will do, and I will push my son to go out a little bit more. But I could see him and my brother being the same. They don't really care to be around a whole lot of people like my daughter and I. You know, it's that I gotta contend with. I don't never have to push my daughter to go out.
She's just an extrovert,
just like me. We just love to be out, and but that's the thing that I'm worried about with my son is, you know, what level of society is he going to want to play at?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's lucky to have a great father like you. I'm sure that whatever path that he takes, you'll have his back, you know.
Thank you, Mia. I appreciate it, and hopefully one day I dream of being on your podcast.
Yes, of course. Let's do it next week. yeah, that will be amazing. We're so honored to have you on the podcast and sharing with the Vietnamese female audience what are the concerns and the male perspective, because I think we need a lot more of that. Yeah,
certainly. Well, thanks again, Mia. I appreciate you coming on today.
It was so fun. Thank you so much, Kenneth, for having me.
Of course.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster.
According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.